Good morning. I'm Ann Schindler, and this is First Coast Connect. Today, from a ban on public camping to the creation of a new African-American advisory board, we're asking Jacksonville Mayor Donna Deegan about the latest city news. She'll also take your calls and questions at 904-549-2937. You can also email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org or reach out via Facebook, X, or Instagram. Later in the program, we welcome Jacksonville native and U.S. Ambassador to South Africa, Ruben Brigitte. But first, I'm here with Mayor Donna Deegan. Mayor, your job doesn't always look fun, but it looks like you had some fun this last week.
You know, it's been a wonderful week. And I have to say, since you brought up Ambassador Brigitte, I just have to say that I was at a meeting with him last night where we gave him the key to the city. I can't wait for you to talk to him.
I was going to ask him this morning if he brought the key with him.
A delightful, delightful person. But my big takeaway from him, I don't know if he'll talk about it because there's so much to talk to him about. But at the very end of his remarks, when answering a question about being an ambassador, he talked about how English is one of the only languages where peace is not also a verb. You know, love is both a noun and a verb. Work is both a noun and a verb. He said in other languages, peace is both a noun and a verb. And I think his point was, you know, peace needs to be a verb. It takes action, and it takes communication and building relationships. And I just totally fell in love with him and his adorable parents, who are wonderful. And you're gonna really enjoy that conversation. He's fabulous.
That's awesome. And what a neat observation about language. This week you had some Chamber of Commerce weather for this big announcement about the Emerald Trail.
Yeah.
Let's start off with some good news.
So exciting. Oh my gosh. I can't even tell you how excited I was when I got that news. It was so hard to hold on to it for days once we got the word. We worked so hard. The entire team. I mean, this was really just a huge team effort.
Remind us what it is and what it does.
So the Emerald Trail is a 30-mile long green belt around the city. Basically, it connects 14 neighborhoods. It provides all sorts of economic development and community development opportunities for 7 underserved neighborhoods. It helps us in terms of being able to daylight those, you know, McCoys. It is amazing everything that's involved in this grant. It was the 6th largest amount of any grant that was given out in the $3.3 billion that was available in that pot of money. Of 132 people who were chosen around the country, 6th largest amount of money, but it is transformative for us. And I will say our team worked very, very hard. We went up to DC several times to campaign for that and others. We've got a lot of other asks in the pipeline, which I'm very hopeful we're going to bring home a lot more, but this is the largest grant in the history of our city, largest one-time grant in the history of our city. So, I just think if you think of everything we're trying to do with resilience, with building those underserved neighborhoods, with absolutely making good on those promises of consolidation, that will help us go a long way towards that. And it's so exciting to see that come to fruition.
And you were also at the White House earlier this week for he was signing some paperwork on women's health.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you, I mean, does it help being a Democratic mayor with a Democratic, presidential administration in terms of, you know, getting those kinds of dollars?
Well, what do you think? You know, it certainly seems that way to me. I mean, it certainly does help to have a good relationship with the administration. And we have had a number of wonderful conversations, both with Secretary Buttigieg and the folks at HUD, a lot of different people in the Biden administration. They've been incredibly helpful to us. Now, hopefully they're helpful to everybody. And if you look at the sum total of all the money that's gone around, there's been a ton of money that's gone to areas that aren't particularly Democrat, you know, focused. But certainly I don't think it hurts to have those relationships. But as I said when I came into this office, Ann, I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, or independent, I'm going to try to develop a relationship. Because I think relationships are the key to everything. If we can find common ground on issues, and we can, because these are the issues that face our city, infrastructure, you know, economic development, health, all those things, I think that you know, we're in great shape. But yes, I think it's definitely been helpful to have those relationships. And in terms of the DC visit earlier, this was a really big deal. As somebody whose passion is health, you know, I got to say, to see that executive order, which is just the beginning of a much larger ask to Congress, to focus on women's health, I don't know how many people are actually aware of the fact that we really, until very, very recently, never really even included women in most studies. Mm-hmm. They were all done on men. Even studies on women's heart disease back in the day were all done on men. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's insane when you think about how many women have gone to the doctor and been told, well, you know, it might be all in your head, or this might just be stress related. You know, because we don't have the answers through data that we really need. And this will begin to shift that. And to me, that was probably one of the most exciting things I've seen out of this administration. I'm just so grateful for that.
Well, this is a community opportunity to speak to you as well. And I've got a number of folks waiting online here. So I'm going to start with Paul in Jacksonville. Good morning, Paul. Welcome to Ask the Mayor.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Ann. Mayor Deegan, thank you so much for taking my question. I actually have a question for you. The reason why I was calling is I'm originally from Tampa. Mm-hmm. I moved to Jacksonville in 2016, 2017. Over the years, to be honest, I haven't seen much change to the city. What would you say to an individual who is in their 30s, who is getting ready to settle down, maybe not start a family just yet? But what would you say to someone like me to say, hey, stay in my city, don't move out, because things are coming?
Well, listen,
to be honest, I mean, everything still looks the same as from back in 2016 with just a few minor improvements.
Well, I can tell you that things are not the same. I know that may look like that to you, but there is a lot in the pipeline. And I'll tell you that this Emerald Trail project, in addition to the fact that we are completely transforming the riverfront, that first riverfront plaza has already begun. Those two projects alone are going to be transformative for our city. And I mean transformative. But I don't have to just sell you. I mean, I have a 30-year-old daughter who lives in Tampa who I'm trying to bring back. So I'm making these arguments every single day. I would tell you that everything from the fact that we are going to be bringing this UF campus downtown to attract graduate students, that we are expanding arts and culture in our city. Under my administration, we have invested more in arts and culture than you've seen in a long time in this city, which young people like you tell us that you want. We're trying to create more opportunities for education. We are certainly bringing in a lot more business to Jacksonville. We are focused heavily on creating a positive environment for small business. So I think there's a lot of really positive things that are happening right now. And it's going to take you a little while to probably, unless you're spending time in some of the areas where a lot of that is happening, it may take a little while for you to see it, but I think it starts with creating the proper priorities, which I really believe we've done, and then digging in to make it happen. But there's a lot of shovels that are going into the ground, and you're going to start seeing a lot of cranes here pretty soon too.
I mean, the restaurant scene is a lot better than it was in 2016.
Oh, I mean, there's so much that's so much better than it was in 2016. But certainly the restaurant scene, but there's a lot of. For those of you who are looking for more of that scene downtown, we are absolutely getting there in terms of both housing developments and plans that we have along the riverfront, the plans for the entertainment district around the stadium. All those things are going to be coming to fruition over the next several years. So I would say if you want to live in downtown Jacksonville, or if you want to live in an urban setting like a lot of young people do, now would be the time to get yourself invested in downtown, because it's coming.
Tom, I believe on the west side, has a question about how we're going to afford some of our initiatives. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, good morning to you, and thank you for maintaining this dialogue. My concern and question is this. I want to know how the city can afford to do both the new jail and the very expensive renovations on the stadium and still have the financial flexibility to respond to unforeseen events.
Well, I can tell you that we have a very, very strong team working on this negotiation with the stadium. I feel very good about where that is. And I think that when you see ultimately the plan that comes out, and we're very, very hopeful that will be sometime in early May, I think you're going to see how that will play out. I feel very confident that we can do all of those things. In terms of the jail, I will say that I am first focused on the stadium. I know that the jail is a big issue. We're going to be hearing from the council on that shortly. But I recently sat down with the sheriff and we talked about it. And he said, I'm really anxious to get the stadium done, too. He said, we've got a little more runway on the jail. We need it. But let's get the stadium done first. And so I think that at the end of the day, both of those things are absolutely possible. We have a very creative team working on those things. So I can't give you any more information than that right now, but I can tell you that I'm very confident we'll be able to afford those things.
I want to ask you about the jail. I mean, obviously, costs now looking like they may be around $1 billion to build a new jail somewhere else. But questions are being raised about whether a new facility would be larger and whether that would just enable additional more incarceration in a county that already has a really high incarceration rate relative to other Florida counties.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I know that the council is supposed to come back with some options on that front. I do know that there have been a lot of discussions about having a mental health facility that would be adjacent to the jail, which I think would be an absolutely wonderful idea because a lot of our mental health patients end up in the jails, and I don't think that our law enforcement officers want that any more than the community wants it. But at this point, there haven't been a whole lot of options that way. So you may be looking at a facility that has the ability to do both, and I think that would be helpful. But I don't know much more about the plans for that until I hear back from what the council is thinking. And there are a number of different options on what we could do in terms of the jail, but I don't want to get ahead of the process.
Right. A question from Mike on X. He says, any update on plans to talk with the community about plans for Springfield Park, hopefully soon to be renamed Ben Frazier Park?
We will absolutely have some charrettes over that process of what to do in Springfield Park. We haven't gotten there yet, but we absolutely will be having community conversations about that.
Okay. Got a question from JD in Ponte Vedra, I believe, about land prices. Good morning, JD. Go ahead.
Not land, landfill. First of all, let me tell you, Donna, I think the world of you. I'm so glad I was out there doing all I could to make sure you became our mayor. I love you to death. Love the job you're doing.
Thank you.
I'm on your side 100%. What I want to bring to your attention is something that should have been was brought to the attention of your predecessor, and it's the looming landfill crisis. If anything that Duval County can learn from is the mistakes that Monroe, Dade, Byron, Palm Beach County have made over the last 30 years. And Jacksonville is heading down the same path. If we do not get a handle on what's going on with our landfills, right now the city of Jacksonville is trucking garbage all the way over to 301. Why? Because the landfills are filling up. There is a process. There is a program, a project been put in front, like I said, of your predecessor that went nowhere. Then it was handed to your office 30 days after you became mayor. So are you familiar with Waste to Energy 4.0?
I am familiar with it, but not enough to really have a detailed discussion with you about it this morning. I do know it's an enormous problem. We have had a lot of discussions about various fixes. Nobody wants a landfill near them. There needs to be continued discussions about transfer stations. But right now, that hasn't been on the top of the priority list.
It's interesting. I mean, there was years ago, I think under Tommy Hazzuri, there was discussions about putting this landfill kind of south of the south side of Jacksonville, which is now Nocatee.
I mean,
you talk about a place that probably could have gone a different direction had that turned into a landfill as initially intended.
But he's perfectly right. It is a looming crisis, and we are going to have to deal with it. And at some point, what we'll have to do is we'll have to come up with a plan that we can take to the community and say, look, this is what makes the most sense. But right now, we're not there.
We're taking your questions and comments for the mayor. It's our monthly Ask the Mayor segment. You can give us a call at 904-549-2937, or you can email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. You can also reach out on X, Facebook, or Instagram. I want to ask you about this new public camping ban that, since we last spoke, was approved by the Florida legislature and signed by the governor. It basically puts the onus on cities to make sure that people are not publicly camping or sleeping on the streets and establish facilities for them to essentially live in that would be, maintained by the city with proper facilities. where will the money for that come from? How is the city going to swallow that obligation?
Well, obviously, before this legislation ever came up, we were working on various solutions for homelessness and affordable housing, which will absolutely continue. You know, we've started a new program where we've tried to keep people that are on the precipice of homelessness out of homelessness. We've started a new down payment program where we're helping first-time home buyers, or we're helping home buyers who may miss the financial cutoff for assistance to help them get into homes. So there are all sorts of things we've been looking at. This is an unfunded mandate, as you know. So it is something that we will have to continue to get creative around. But at the end of the day, these are not issues that we have not already been working on. Look, it is an issue we have to deal with. People don't feel safe when they're walking around the streets, and there's a lot of folks that are on the streets, and we want those people to have places to live. When I was at the U.S. Conference of Mayors up in D.C. some weeks ago, I met a gentleman who has a project called the Karma Project. It's gotten big in Reno, Nevada. We've had a meeting with him and are anxious to bring him down for more discussions. But they've had a lot of success around creating small homes for families to live in, or for people to live in who are homeless, that would help us with this. I don't love the idea of a tent city. I do understand that we need to find more places for folks to be, and we need them to be off of the streets. But you can't, to me, it's very hard to ask people to go someplace unless you have a place for all of them to go. And so that's what we have to really focus on. We're going to have to focus on, how do we create that? How will we fund it? And there are different pots of money for that. But at this point, this puts this front and center for us. We have to comply with this new law, and we will. But to me, the best solution is to find more housing for people. And that's what we're going to try to do.
It does seem that it could actually be kind of a unifying topic, though, for you and the city council. I mean,
sure.
Both have expressed concerns about ways to deal with the homeless issue. And
yeah, city council is working on that right now as well.
But I would think that they would also be equally kind of disgruntled with the idea of having to create essentially a tent city that's funded by the city without any help from the state.
Yeah, it is, I'm sure, a frustration for a lot of us that are already working on these problems and trying to get to solutions. But I do think we'll get there, because we are both very focused on finding solutions there, and we will.
Okay, I've got to call Stanley on the north side. Good morning, Stanley. Go ahead.
Good morning, ladies. Y'all doing a great job.
Good morning.
Yes. Especially Mayor. Mayor doing a great job. But I am concerned here, because I'm in civic engagement, me and my good friend John Nooney. We live down there in City Hall. But my concern is, when it comes to the urban core, I don't hear no conversation about that. I have reached out to the mayor's office, but they are slow about calling back to citizens who are concerned. Thank you.
I was curious as to exactly what he's talking about. Certainly, a lot of our initiatives are absolutely directed toward the urban core. I mean, that's really most of what we've talked about. So I'm not exactly sure what particular issues he's talking about in terms of the infrastructure that we're working on, in terms of all these things that will be affected by this work on the Emerald Trail, when we're looking at the community benefit agreement that we will have with the Jaguars, that will include a large portion of help for our urban community. So I think I'm not sure exactly where his what he's referencing, but I don't know that there's been another administration that has focused more on the urban core than this one has so far, and we'll continue to do that.
Stanley, is there something specific that you're referencing there?
Yes, I'm talking about the leadership when it comes to the urban core. You're calling out the same people, and I know these people. I'm talking about as far as leadership with in the previous mayors. For the last 50 years, I have been in three charter revision, and everybody talk about ethic, but nothing changed. When I'm talking about the urban core, I'm talking about the leadership from the bottom up, not top down.
Gotcha, Stanley.
Okay, thank you, Stanley.
I mean, that brings up an interesting point. You know, Stanley calls regularly, and he has raises questions about the African-American community. Mm-hmm. You recently started a advisory group, an African-American advisory group, tell us a little bit about who's going to staff that, who's going to be on it, how those people are selected, and who can apply if they're interested.
Well, maybe this is something that would interest Stanley. We are. It's going to be an 11-person African-American advisory group. We want a group that can advise the mayor's office on issues relating to the African-American community, which continues to grow in our city, and we want to make sure that we're addressing the issues most important to that community. So we're right now accepting applications to be on that advisory panel. Now, obviously, it's relatively small, but what we want to do is make that diverse enough around the African-American community that we have voices from every community and aspect.
And how can people apply if they're interested?
I believe that's all on the city website.
Okay. We've got a call from Ira on the south side. Good morning, Ira. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Mayor, you're doing a great job, but I have a question. Relatively new to Jacksonville, the speeding and driving control is out of control. Is there a way for you to somehow get the people who police driving to get some kind of system where that you would be able to pay for, let's say, CCTV like they have in Europe to help the police identify people who are speeding and also do some also ancillary checks, like they can do places where they can look at how the people in the car, what's in the car, how they do the car, they can scan it. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you can do to help increase your budget by putting the driving fines into place? Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Listen, that is a problem citywide. And when we had our 14 community conversations when I first got into office, that very topic came up at every single one of them. People are very frustrated by it. JSO is obviously frustrated by it. We have a large city, you know, 850 square miles, basically, and it's hard to police on a daily basis every one of those streets. And a lot of these things are happening on neighborhood streets. So you can put a police officer in place. They can put one of those, you know, signs up with the speed limit that flashes for a period of time. But then as soon as that's gone, people go back to the same behavior. So I know that they are looking at creative solutions. We are too. We recognize that it's a problem. The thing is, when you try to get a consensus from neighborhoods on what they want, you know, some people absolutely don't want speed bumps. Some people do, but it becomes a very controversial issue. When you're talking about some of the things this gentleman's talking about, it becomes an issue that some people say is a privacy issue. And so getting a consensus on the best way to handle this is it's, you know, it's fraught.
But it may not get maybe the attention. I mean, the traffic death rate really dwarfs the homicide rate in this city, in any city, but it doesn't really get that same focus or attention.
That's right. You're absolutely right. I mean, there are things that we can do in terms of the pedestrian deaths that we see, and we're working on those things right now. Again, I think the Emerald Trail will help there, but we're also working on bike paths that will have barriers between the street, the traffic, and the bikers. Mm-hmm. Those are things that we're looking at doing. So there are a number of things we can do in terms of pedestrian safety. But as far as speeding, there are traffic cameras and all sorts of things that you can put in place. That the issue is, you know, are you going to get that through the proper authorities?
Lots of calls waiting, so we'll just try to go through as many as we can. Good morning, Jenny from Arlington. Go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you, Mayor, for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
I've lived here my entire life. I'm 57, almost 58 now. I own a home for about the last 22 years. My issue is this. I seem to be having an issue now with the city ticketing me for having a tarp on my roof. I have a tarp on my roof because I'm not wealthy enough to afford a $25,000 roof. I understand that you recently had some kind of a call to apply for assistance for roofs. By the time I found out about it, it literally was over in an hour and maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans to have another one of those rounds of funding? Because I'm not alone. My neighbors are up the street. We're all getting ticketed by the city because we're too poor to put a new roof on our house.
Listen, I understand. And I absolutely, we are looking to expand that program. When we first took this program to council, we asked for $1 million to start. Council said, let's give you half of that and see how the program goes. I think it's very, very clear by the fact that this program filled up in an hour and a half that the need is great out there. And so we're going back to council to ask for more. And what you have to look at this as, too, is these are our pilot programs, which we're hoping once we show how successful they are, we can expand them. And that will be up to council to how much funding that will get. But clearly it's a big issue. But I hear you on the fines, and I will take that back and see if there's something that we can do in that regard, because it does seems counterproductive to
you find people who can't afford a roof.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a call, Hilda on the west side. Go ahead, Hilda.
Hi. Could the city not partner with the motels and use vouchers for the homeless people? Could they not open up shuttered schools? Because, you know, those schools, and you know, place the women in a separate school and the men in a separate school. I'm sure the motels are not at full capacity, and this would be a win-win situation. You would get somebody off the street, plus the motels would be being paid as well. Also, I'm concerned about all the septic tanks that are being put in the west side on these new builds, and they're being placed near waterways. Metro Park, is that ever going to open again for concerts? Because that was really would have been an ideal situation for people to get out and have families to be out in the open air during COVID. And for some reason, it's as if we can't have concerts there any longer. Also, the stadium, if it's going to be a stadium of the future, I personally believe that it cannot be where they do more changes to it. I think it should be a brand new stadium elsewhere, maybe in St. John's County. I think that a stadium of the future has to be climate controlled.
Thanks, Hilda. That's a lot for her to tackle, so go for it.
That's a big list. Surely we want our stadium here near the downtown and the entertainment district and in Jacksonville. A lot has been done to make sure that is as resilient as it can possibly be. I know Melissa Ross is over on the other side of the glass laughing at me with all those questions. She's, I can't remember all of them, man. I don't remember what else.
Homeless solution, okay. Of the okay. Motels.
Certainly happy to look at any homelessness solution. But I think what I would like to see us do is provide, individual places if we can for folks to live in as much as we can do that. But I'm certainly open to any sort of solutions. What was the other?
God, I don't know. I'm struggling to remember myself. I got a little overwhelmed.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a lot.
septic tanks that are being, that is a good question.
So, no, it is a good question.
We're trying
question.
To take a lot of developments offline from septics, and yet we're permitting new developments with septic tanks.
Listen, I've said this forever. It doesn't make any sense to me, honestly. This is why I want to focus so much on infill. On places where we already have infrastructure that we can build upon.
But can we not limit or say, like, no, we're not going to permit new septic tanks, new developments with new septic tanks? We know that they're going to fail. We know that they pollute. Why can't we just not do it?
Well, certainly we can. We can do that if there is the will to do that. At the end of the day, you know, what we're looking at is they are, I will say, the type of septic tanks they're using now are certainly better than the ones that were there before, but we shouldn't be putting any septic tanks in near the water whatsoever. And frankly, I'd like to not put any in at all, but that is a practice that still continues at this point.
All right. Got a call, Lewis from Northwest Jacksonville. Good morning, Lewis. Go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning. I just wanted to say, to the mayor, we're not in the same party, but I like what you're doing to bring folks together and to work things out as adults. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
The gentleman that called about the traffic issue, I kind of want to go along with that, because we have a new purchase or new build. We've been in the house about 2 years now, and where we are, where there's a golf course across the street, and then the houses are on one side of the street. And so we have, there's a bit of a problem with speeding. And so in my mind, the city is here to help us, to work with us. But at the end of the day, the city belongs to the citizens, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So, right. So then if the few neighbors that are all there, like we're contiguously in like seven houses and we all have small children and like we're all wondering what should we do? And so we're all in a position where we're like, we can afford to have someone come put speed bumps in just right there in our section where we don't need the city's money. So I guess the question is, do we do it renegade or do, or, you know, where like a man, you know, like how they say a boy does, he seeks for permission, but a man just does it and then asks for forgiveness.
Lewis, we're trying to move on. So I'm just going to have her answer the question.
Okay. Yeah. Listen, I would love to work with you on that. I don't see any reason if your neighborhood wants something like that, that we can't work with you to make that happen without you having to go rogue there. But I, like I said, the problem that we find in most of these neighborhoods is you have about half of the folks that want those and half that don't. But if you have a neighborhood that agrees, I'm sure we can work something out there.
All right. I've got a call from Brad at the Beaches. Good morning, Brad. Go ahead.
My question was about what the mayor may have learned from the JEA trial as far as what would shape her in appointing people to boards in the future. I think a little bit of the case that came out was, I don't want to say board members were asleep at the wheel, but it seems as though they weren't as interested or were just kind of showing up. So how of seeing the inner workings through this trial of the way the JEA board went, would it shape JTA or the other boards she appoints people to?
Thanks, Brad. I mean, I think it's fair to say the board was kind of asleep at the wheel, right?
Yeah, it's a good question. But remember, that was one of the priorities I brought up during the campaign, that I wanted to both diversify and activate those boards. So we have been, this is why we elevated that position of creating those board positions, because we wanted to make sure that the people that we were vetting and putting into those board positions were people who really wanted to be there, but also people that represented a cross-section of Jacksonville instead of just a particular person's perspective of what should happen, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes, you know, these boards have been appointed as favors to people or as, you know, political friends or whatever. But at the end of the day, what we want these boards to be is active participants in our city government. And I think that what you're going to see here over the next several years, I hope, is a lot more involvement.
I think we're going to take one more call here. Richard in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Richard, just briefly.
Hey, I wanted to get Mayor, by the way, Mayor Deegan, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
You probably know that I'm here in the Dunn Avenue area. One of the major issues is this Ameris Bank settlement and the redlining. And I wanted to get the mayor's opinion of that case. And what are we doing to make certain that the other banks in the city are not doing the same thing?
Thank you for that question. Listen, that's a big deal. And we have had other banks in addition to Ameris come forward and say, you know, and Ameris never admitted any sort of wrongdoing there, but they said, we want to be part of this solution. So they are part of these plans that are providing assistance for people to get down payment money. That's in addition to what we're doing with the city. So there are a number of banks that are participating in those programs now. And we are very intentionally in our programs through the city, working through areas that have been victimized by redlining over the years. This is not something that's going to be resolved overnight, but that is where our focus has been in terms of trying to provide.
Do you think the Ameris investigation is a warning to other lenders to not engage in redlining?
Well, obviously redlining is illegal, right? So hopefully, I think that what you're seeing from other banks that have seen this settlement is, While they would argue there were a million different reasons why things happened the way they did, they're seeing, okay, let us try to actively be part of the solution to help these folks that have been left behind have an opportunity to have exactly what they should be having. And so I think you're going to see a lot more of that.
Well, I'm sorry to our callers that we weren't able to get to Mayor Dunn.
Boy, a lot of people today.
That's a lot of calls.
Thank you, everybody, for calling.
I just want to say on a final note, on St. Patty's Day, I think you solved the Wordle on a single guess. Am I right?
I mean, was that luck of the Irish or what?
Seriously, you know? What was the word?
Do I have to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, the word was snort. And I start with it every single day because I read at the very beginning of when I started to do Wordle, you know, it has all those consonants that you normally find in a lot of words. And then, you know, you get one vowel in there. And so
Well done.
I figured eventually it would come up and I hit the jackpot on St. Patty's Day. I'm sure me and a lot of other people.
Well, congratulations. And Mayor Donna Deegan, thanks again for being here for our Ask the Mayor segment as you do each month.
Thank you so much, Anne.
And we'll see you soon. And up next, from Sandalwood High School to South African Ambassador, we talk to U.S. Envoy Reuben Brigidy about his journey from Jacksonville. Welcome back. I'm joined now by Ruben Brigady, a native Jacksonvillian and current U.S. ambassador to the Republic of South Africa. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I believe you did get with the mayor last night. You got a key to the city. Congratulations.
That's deeply humbling. Thank you very much.
You are an alumnus of Sandalwood High School.
And a proud product of Duval County Public Schools from the time I was in kindergarten. That's correct.
And so do you get back often to Jacksonville? And when you do, what, if any, changes are you seeing?
I don't get back as often as my parents would like, for sure.
They're still here.
Yeah, they're still here. God bless them. My father turns 80 this weekend.
Oh, so, happy birthday, Dad.
Thank you very much. But, you know, Jacksonville is one of the great mid-major cities in the United States of America. And I'm continually impressed by the increased diversity in the city in terms of how many immigrant populations I see and the new construction and new development in this large, vast city that we have. And so I've always been proud to claim that I'm originally from Jacksonville, Florida, and I can still consider it home.
Do you have any memories of this place that really stand out to you or were in any way formative for your current career as a diplomat?
Oh, goodness. I have so many. We probably don't have time. I will tell you the last time I was in these studios was probably 35 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I was an active participant in what was then, I think, the Brain Brawl competitions. I don't know if they still have those or not.
Wow, Brain Brawl. Yeah, yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, and you know, spent a lot of time. Actually, as I was driving here to the studios and coming up to the stadium, I just they would have the fall fairs there every fall, and I remember being there with friends and just the smell in the air, I think, really sticks with me. So it's really great to be back home.
So you are married. You have two children. I've got to ask, does being a professional diplomat make you like better at those jobs? Huh? Does it make you relate better to your wife and your children? Are you have a skill set that you can share with the rest of us?
You know, I will say at some point I might write a book about diplomacy and parenting. Some of the very similar
Sign
lessons. Exactly. Absolutely. That's right.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit. I mean, you work in South Africa. You, I believe, live in D.C. area.
No, I'm posted in South Africa now. So I live there with my family, except for my sons who are back in the United States now for education. But when I'm not posted abroad, then yes, our home is in the Northern Virginia area outside of Washington.
And so talk to us about living in South Africa. What is the state of U.S. relations with South Africa, and what is your role in managing those relationships?
Sure. Well, the U.S.-South Africa relationship is a strategic relationship. It's important for both of us. South Africa is the most developed economy on the African continent. It is also one of the most important voices in what many people call the global south of developing countries. The United States has its largest diplomatic presence in the entire continent of Africa in South Africa, and one of the largest in the world. And so as ambassador and chief of mission, I'm responsible for 1,400 people that work in our embassy there. We have some 50 separate U.S. government offices and agencies, over four different posts in the country. Our embassy is in the capital of Pretoria, and then we have consulates in Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Durban. And so we do a great deal in terms of helping to manage the diplomatic bilateral relationship, and we've had a number of very senior engagements between members of our government and their government, both in Washington and also in South Africa.
And so I think of that as overall a pretty solid relationship. They're allies. They're not currently at war. It's kind of a stable place. But last year, I think that you had a situation that showed that can be a delicate balance. There was some concern about some comments you made. Tell us what happened there. It was involving whether South Africa is kind of moving closer to Russia in its war with Ukraine.
Sure. So South Africa's foreign policy is one that they describe as non-alignment, meaning that they enjoy and seek to have cordial relationships with diplomatic relationships with everybody. Our perspective, of course, is that South Africa is, of course, is a sovereign country, and we respect your non-alignment. If there are situations in which there are actions that are taken that appear to be not non-aligned and that are contrary to our vital national interest, then we need to have a discussion. And so we had one of those situations in late 2022 when a sanctioned Russian cargo vessel pulled into South Africa's key naval port. We had a series of discussions over a series of months about what that means. We have been grateful that the government of South Africa has publicly addressed it, that they have conducted an investigation, and our governments have agreed that we're not going to talk about it publicly further.
The concern at the time, though, just to be clear, was that Russia may have been getting arms to fight in Ukraine while it was ported there in South Africa, that was kind of an effort to either collect some arms from South Africa or to use in Ukraine. That was kind of the nature of the concern.
Indeed. And as I've said, we have, although we are partners, we have different views on a variety of situations around the world, Russia, Ukraine being one, Israel, Gaza being another. But we remain and maintain very robust conversations behind the scenes in order to do what the South Africans say, to find each other, to try to find ways to find common ground as we address these very difficult and thorny issues together.
Talk to us a little bit about the post-apartheid realities in South Africa and what that means for living there, for people who are Black, people who are white, how that relationship is going, and how the government is, you know, working, or in some cases, you know, having some difficulties managing that transition.
Sure. Well, for those perhaps younger listeners that may not be fully familiar, the system of apartheid in South Africa was official state-sanctioned segregation in which a white minority of South Africans essentially denied rights to the majority Black population. I mean, the most basic rights. All Black people were required to hold passes. Black South Africans, which constituted the vast majority of the population, were not even considered citizens. So it was illegal for them to even have a passport, illegal for them to even to be outside of the country. And the vast majority of the wealth went towards the white minority that was in control. This led to a substantial anti-apartheid struggle, which, to cut a long story short, culminated in the release of Nelson Mandela from prison in 1990 and the first free democratic elections of South Africa in April 1994.
He was the leader of the African National Congress.
Indeed, he was was one of the leaders of the African National Congress. That's correct. Mm-hmm. And so this year, this May, in fact, May 29th, marks 30 years since the advent of full democracy in South Africa. And quite frankly, there have been an awful lot of challenges. The good news, of course, is that all South Africans are fully free and equal under the law, all have full access to political participation. But the full promise of the end of apartheid has actually not yet occurred, with massive unemployment, substantial crime, and other social challenges.
A lot to manage and a lot to work with every day, but it's a pleasure to meet you. Reuben Brigady, South African Ambassador, thanks for being here and thanks for the work that you do.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stick around. We'll be right back with a look ahead at what to do this weekend.
Florida Roundup, real estate commissions. Some big changes are coming to the traditional 6% total commission when you buy or sell a home. No state has more at risk than Florida, with more realtors here than any other place. If you're buying or selling a house, how do you feel about the commission to the agent you're working with? If you're an agent, what could changes to your traditional commission structure mean? Email us now, radio@thefloridaroundup.org. I'm Tom Hudson. Join me Friday at noon.
It can be hard to let your mind wander sometimes, to learn about something new, or to get fully engrossed in somebody else's story. That's where NPR comes in.
It takes a long time to create a fairy tale.
He was both a Jesuit priest and a jazz manager.
As soon as I saw the subject, I thought, oh my God, this is it.
Invest in deep, human storytelling today by giving to this station.
Please call 904-353-9528 and thanks. I'm Deepa Fernandez. For many adoptees, the portrayal of adoption in stories can leave them feeling let down.
Our stories have been told for such a long time by people who are not adopted. Being able to really express our own perspectives is incredibly powerful.
A new children's book aims to do just that, next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
A question runs through the new album from singer Aoife O'Donovan.
I do feel that it's a very important question that we all need to be asking ourselves. What is this democracy for which we are battling?
And suffragist Carrie Chapman Catt first spoke those words in 1918, and they inspired the new album from Grammy winner Aoife O'Donovan. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
And we're back. Arts, culture, music, it's all happening on the First Coast this weekend. And I am joined, as I am each Thursday, by Yaya Cardona. Cardona, why do I always mix that up? It's like the Yaya that throws me off. The Yaya Cardona of Create Jax. She does not have her little buddy with her today. No Mambo.
Not today.
Well, tell us why.
Because I have a huge announcement.
Let's hear it.
Starting today, I am officially the Hispanic Outreach Coordinator for the City of Jacksonville.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
What great news.
I am really honored and excited to start this new position to represent my Hispanic. It's the fastest growing demographic here in Jacksonville, and I am ready to start some good trouble.
You are going to be amazing.
Yes. So
I can't think of a more enthusiastic ambassador. We had an ambassador in here just a minute ago, but you're going to be a great ambassador.
Gracias, gracias. So I'm excited. Estoy emocionada. So look out, world.
Congratulations.
Bueno, let's get to what we're here for. We're here to talk about what's going on here in the 904. Thanks to Create Jax, the owner, Tony Smilagich, who puts up a list every Thursday of what's going around in Jacksonville. Follow us on our website on createjax.com, CREHJax.com. But today is Thursday. It's the third Thursday of the month.
Oh, what does that mean?
It's Sip and Stroll.
Sip and Stroll.
I love Sip and Stroll. To me, it's the adult version of Art Walk. Is it South Bank River Walk from 5 to 8 p.m. completely
free? The adult
free.
Version of Art Walk.
I do. I feel like.
That's great.
I mean, you can bring your kids. I'm not saying. I just feel like it's one of those, like, it's more.
Grown
adult.
Up.
Yeah, more grown up.
Gotcha.
You sip. You literally do that. You sip and stroll throughout South Walk. South Bank Riverwalk, and there's live music. One of my favorites, Let's Ride Brass Band, will be out there, and Groove Coalition. I love them. Shout out to Tommy from the band. And don't forget that at the end, you could go to the Double Tree pool deck with the Hush Hush Silent Disco.
I know you're a fan of the Silent Disco.
I am
disco.
A fan. Listen, I took my cousin. He was here in Puerto Rico, visiting from Puerto Rico. He's never done a Silent Disco, and it was a whole new world for him. He fell in love with it, and that's what I love about Jacksonville, is that we get to introduce our visitors to cool new things like that. So check that out. That's a Sip and Stroll. All right, and let's talk about St. Augustine Amphitheater, the band that's playing there. It's Widespread Panic.
WSP, man. They are a cult favorite. So. They're from Athens, Georgia, I think. And
okay.
They always do like a multi-night stand, incredible musicians. And the people that go are there literally all three nights.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it is a...
So they have a huge following then.
Oh, enormous, yeah.
And yeah, they always been around for 30 years, mm-hmm. A span of their 30-year career.
Yeah, they are a legend in their own time. So people really appreciate their musicianship, you know, and they also just kind of worship and follow them. They're...
Okay.
And like a Grateful Dead of a different sound.
I love that. I'm gonna have to check it out. Do you know that the third biggest population here in Jacksonville is Filipinos?
Is that right?
Yeah, it is. We have so much history here in the Filipino culture. Well, this Friday at the WJCT studios at 6 p.m., they're gonna be showing Nurse Unseen. It's
a documentary.
Yeah, it's a documentary.
I saw a trailer for that. Yeah.
I'm excited. It's a documentary about a little-known history of Filipino nurses and their contributions and sacrifices on the front lines during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, it's a really extraordinary story. I mean, I saw the trailer, but they look, you know, at kind of the history of that migration, particularly to the West Coast for people in the medical profession. Yeah, and so many nurses were on the front lines during COVID, a lot of them sadly lost their lives. Yeah. But it looks like a really cool film.
Well, we thank them for that and for their sacrifice. And if you want to check that out, that's going to be Friday, tomorrow at WJCT Studios at 6 p.m.
Excellent.
Have you been to the River Taxi? Have you done any River Taxis?
River Taxi is fun. It's a great way to see the city. And especially if you're like us and we don't have a boat, having an opportunity to jump on somebody's boat and see the city from the water, it's super cool.
And now they could serve alcohol. Before they weren't. So now it's even better. Yeah. Now they have beer and wine license. So check that out. Listen to this. If you don't have anything going on this Saturday, it's the River Taxi Tour of Arlington Riverfront. All right. You get to see houses from the vantage point.
We were talking about this on the show this week. It's going to be looking at the architecture and kind of the history through scenic Jacksonville's eyes of Arlington. It sounds like a really cool venture.
I love it. Anything that's on the water, I'm here for it. So check that out. If you've never been on the River Taxi Tour, this is one to do. It's this Saturday starting at 9:30 a.m.
I think we've time for just one more quickie.
One more. Okay. What do we want to talk about?
You want to do inclusive hockey, the Jacksonville Icemen?
Yes. A shout out to Megan Haywood, who's one of the owners, and it's Women History Month, so that's why I'm giving her a shout out. But it's hockey is for all night. It's Jacksonville Iceman is starting at 7 p.m. this Saturday. It's at the Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena. They're taking on the Greenville Swamp Rabbits.
Yeah, and some of each ticket goes towards River City Pride. So.
Oh, that is amazing. Yeah. I love when there's collabs like that.
Yeah. Well, you can find much more information on the Create Jax website.
Yep, CRE8Jax.com. Follow us on social media, and you can follow me on my page, Jaja Love Jax.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Gracias. Great to see you. Congrats on the new job.
Gracias. Have a great weekend, everybody.
All right. And that's our program. Join us again tomorrow for our Week in Review. We're going to be talking about everything from a bigger jail to whether that could lead to bigger incarceration rates. I'm Ann Schindler. You've been listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.